Hey, America!
Start listening now! Ah, that was pretty good, actually. Okay. Hey, everyone. I'm super excited. I just thought that today would be a really good day to celebrate an instance where a guy from Italy kind of took over America, whether we liked it or not. Doesn't that sound great?
Yay!
Happy Columbus Day, everyone! Then cut the okay. And welcome to another culturally sensitive episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Podcast from America, the country where I skip the word contest. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
I had another one, but I'll just have to save it because I skipped contest. You know, that's not meant to be a commentary. I'm like, well, it's not really a contest anymore. Or is it?
Stay tuned.
I don't know. Anyway, I hope you have a happy day, regardless of what you call it. We are recording this on Monday, October 13th. It is by many people come to be in America, Indigenous Peoples Day. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day, everybody. It is also, according to some, the other thing. So, you know. Happy other thing, everyone, if that's the way you want to go. He's in the bad place. Just remember that.
But yeah. If your birthday happens to be Monday, October 13th, then, you know, happy belated birthday. And
that's,
you know,
right.
We celebrate that. I don't know who, you know, if there are any famous people whose birthdays are October 13th. And if I had thought of this before right now, I would have looked things up. But I'm not, and I'm lazy. So, yeah. Good times.
You know, Sam, as it happens... I have not double checked this, but there is a good article I found on Eurovision birthdays, and there are a few Eurovision birthdays on October 13th.
Ooh, do tell.
Yes, including Claudia Pascual.
Ah, Jardine, yes.
Yes. Actually, this is just formatted weird. Hers was the 12th. So happy belated birthday to Claudia Pascual. We have Gustav Winkler on the 13th. Mm-hmm. Jacques Raymond is October 13th. Nana Mouskouri.
Oh, Nana Mouskouri. Yes, love her.
Is let's see. Well, she wouldn't want us to say how old she is today, but it is her birthday. Vanessa Chinator has a birthday today. Virginie Pouchin. Also birthday today. And tomorrow, Cliff Richard.
Ooh, Well, congratulations and celebrations to him.
Yeah. Tomorrow also, Iveta Makuchian, one of our favorites. So happy birthday to her as well. This will not be a recurring segment of 12 Points from America. But speaking of recurring segments, Sam, why don't you hit him with the socials?
All right. You can find us on all the standard social media outlets at 12pointsUSA, or just email us directly at 12pointsofamerica@gmail.com. We'd love hearing from you all. You can find our merchandise over on our Redbubble page, or you can support us with a one-off donation on our Ko-fi account. That's ko-fi.com, or a sustained monthly donation on our Patreon. Whether you support us financially or not, we love and appreciate you either way, but Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. Woo! Yeah. Excitement.
Yeah, Patreon. Check out the Patreon. We are putting up shows early, doing extra segments, things like that, and doing some trivia bits that are fun. I need to come up with more of those so we can fire off some and get those up there, because those are really fun to do, and I hope you enjoy listening to them as well. And who knows? We might dig up some old things. We might put together some clip compilations and things like that that I think would be very fun. So, what's going on in Europe? Oh, it's the same thing.
Yeah. So as we said, we are recording this on Monday, October 13th. And it seems like some news has come down through a couple of networks and a couple of reliable sources to say that the discussion and the vote that we had mentioned on our last episode regarding, whether certain parties were going to be at the party in Vienna. So evidently that vote is not going to be happening. We were anticipating a vote amongst all full EBU members in early November. We now know that probably, you know, on the basis of the ceasefire agreement that has come through, that vote will not be happening. However, there will be a discussion about Khan's presence at the EBU's next general session, which is going to be in early December. So I suppose the can has been kicked somewhat.
The Khan has been kicked, perhaps.
Hey, Khan! Yeah.
Folks, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I am tired of the last 2 years of Eurovision discourse being about one thing that just kind of makes it miserable. I'm all for anything that makes that better. And the things that are going on now, you know, could they lead to a better situation? I think it could. I think that would be great. I guess I'm just saying that I understand the move to calm things down. I also think that, you know, there are still things to consider. I also think that there's still the matter of what happens in the televote now.
I'm sure that discussions that we are certainly not privy to as members of the fan press are still going on. I would think that if nothing happens, that's not going to happen. Like, I think there's been enough of an uproar among people who are not us that
I would hope.
Yeah.
I just so wish that Eurovision was the thing that the EBU believes it is, in terms of a politically neutral thing celebrating songs. And it's not.
Unfortunately, we live in a very deeply flawed and complex world.
I know we don't talk about this much, and I understand why. I'm just tired, guys. I'm just tired.
I just, you know, hope for peace in every sense of it. I know it's a platitude. I know it's overly simplified, but just that's all you can hope for. So we will see how things develop. Of course, we will of course talk about it. We will always of course talk about it on the show at least a little bit when something big like this happens. But we will we'll keep y'all posted. Should we lighten the mood a little bit?
No. I also think that...
oh, God. Now he's drop-kicking chinchillas?
They know what they did. No, let's change it up. Let's change it up. Let's talk about...
Let's talk about how your friends... Christopher Columbus some more.
Let's
talk about how your friends at 12 Points from America seem to have diametrically opposing taste from your friends at OGAE.
I know whose side I'm on.
All right, folks, if you rewind a couple of episodes, I think it was episode 263 from our show, we discussed the songs that were in the running for the OGAE Second Chance Contest. And, we were wrong, folks. We were wrong. So the OGAE, as we know, every participating chapter will pick a song that did not win in the national final. They put them all up against each other, and all the OGAE members, the official fan club members around the world, will vote. This year, the final voting leaderboard from the 39th annual OGAE Second Chance Contest, with a resounding 348 points, was Sweden, Clara Hammarström's On and On and On, a song that we gave no points to.
Nailed it. If you ask me, it's the OGAE who are wrong.
Yeah.
I've been saying that for years.
Yeah, this song's fine, but it's like, oh, Sweden won.
Okay.
Moving on.
It should also be noted that the song that came in second, Georgia's La Cura Per Me from Italy, with 258 points, we also gave no points to. However, we have a little bit of redemption in the fact that the song that came in third place, Goldilocks Made Of from Finland, we placed it as our number one for the OGAE Second Chance, and that ended up getting the bronze medal with the official contest. So we're not completely out of it, but we're just, our tastes tend to diverge from our friends at OGAE. We love them. There's a place for everybody. But,
guys. So. There are other countries.
Are there?
Yes. Yes, there are other countries.
Thing. Anyway, yes. So Clara Hammerstrom's On and On and On was fourth place at Melfest. I wonder why they didn't pick, take the song that came in second. But but she gets her due. And so, yeah, we will, I guess the fine folks at OGA East Sweden will have the honor of hosting the Second Chance contest next year. So congrats to Clara. Good on you, girl. And we will reevaluate her taste.
I mean, we know how Melfest do. She gonna show up on the big show at some point here?
I would imagine so. At least certainly coming back to Melfest at some point. I feel like that's you see a returning cast of characters, and obviously the fans love her. So I would not be surprised to see her come back someday.
Yeah. This is going awesome. Yeah. So
yeah but this you never know, really.
Yeah.
All right. We look forward, of course, to the next year's competition. We are past the September 1st deadline by over a month and a half at this point, and we don't have any knowledge of who is going to be singing for anybody yet. I think this is probably the latest in quite a long time that we've had no news from any of the delegations. I'm sure a lot of folks are holding things close to the chest, waiting for news of, you know, what we were talking about earlier in this episode before nailing any banners to the wall here. But we do have a couple of countries who have announced their national finalists. Over in Benidorm in Spain, they've released the names of the Benidorm Fest acts, including a shock entrant to me. I'm freaking thrilled about this, but I never would have expected Argentinian act Miranda to be joining the Benidorm Fest lineup. I'm speaking as somebody who studied abroad in Chile about 20 years ago at this point, and their songs Don and Yo Te Diré were absolutely everywhere. They are bops. They are absolute bops. Highly, highly recommended if you don't know their work. And they are now going to be collaborating with the guy who was the lead singer of that song, Vari Brava, or the group Vari Brava from a couple of years ago that did that song Rafaela. So they're collaborating. So I expect the boppetry on this to be off the charts. It looks like they've collaborated together before. So win or lose, it's going to be fun. It also looks like we're going to have a return from an act named Luna Key, who was also supposed to be taking part in Benidorm Fest a couple of years ago, but due to an early release of a song, she had to withdraw. But she's out for blood this time around. So we will get her song eventually as well. And in other just interesting facts from the Benidorm Fest lineup, it looks like we have two potential hereditary acts in the mix. Looks like
Ari Aster bursts into flame suddenly or has an allergic reaction.
Keep your head and hands inside the car.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, boy. So the guy who represented Spain at Eurovision in 1997, Marcos Llunas, his son Ethan, I suppose, if you're being all Castilian about it, is in the running, as is Mikael Herzog Jr. Mikael represented Spain in 1998. So who knows? We'll see. So we do not have the songs yet. We just have the artist listings, but we'll get those eventually. And the national final will be going on no matter what Spain's status at Eurovision in May is going to be. So whatever happens, these songs are still going to be.
Sam, is there any precedent to like Chilean acts showing up either for Spain or otherwise?
Miranda, for the record, is Argentinian. I think if you called any Argentinian Chilean, they might get pissed off at you. And vice versa. They happen to be popular in Chile.
On a related note, Javier Milei can
well, that too.
Argentina just had a huge windfall, so you know they can afford to send somebody to Spain for Benidorm. I guess that is kind of an interesting question, because I mean we've seen French colonies send French songs. Has the Spanish world kind of done the same thing, or is it pretty exclusively Spain?
There have been a couple of representatives of Spain that were born elsewhere. I mean, Chanel, we know, was born in Cuba. Off the top of my head, I believe that 1979's act, Betty Mississiego, was born in Lima. So she's Peruvian. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I know that Javier Amena, who was in the national final back in 2022, is Chilean with the song Culpa. But she's also had a, you know, success in on the continent as well, or on the European continent, I should say. It hasn't been quite as far reaching as France has been in terms of like reaching out to its offshore, either its offshore department or, the colonial history. But yeah, there have been a couple throughout France, you know, especially during the 80s and 90s were really big on that, but it's been a little less so.
There have been some other instances of things like that. Denmark has sent Faroese artists.
Mm-hmm.
The Netherlands, as a host country, sent us a guy from Suriname.
Yep.
That sort of thing. It, generally speaking, the Spanish portion of South America, and I guess also Central America, is there still a strong, like, cultural bond between those countries and Spain, or has the, you know, their various independences and all that kind of put somewhat of a distance between them?
I would say there's a decent amount of distance. I wouldn't necessarily see the pathway of musicians, for example, going from, you know, Chile, Argentina, Colombia into Spain. Like, I'm sure that there's crossover on the charts and things like that, but I feel like the Latin American market is huge enough that many artists might not necessarily feel the need to go to Iberia in order to really kind of stake their claim. But I'm not a Latin American artist. I can't necessarily speak for that.
Why not, Sam?
Well, nobody wants to hear me sing. Not sober anyway.
That's okay. Why she was in Chile pursuing a music career. She just didn't share it with anyone.
Come back 6 months later, tail between my legs, but at least I'm fluent in Chilean Spanish.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chilean accent. I mean, honestly, like, the accent alone might be enough to turn some Chileans from going into Spain. Like, it's really quite amusing. Like, one, people don't necessarily expect me to speak Spanish, but when I speak to a Spaniard in my Anglo-Chilean accent, it's sort of like if somebody from Chile started speaking to you in a full Scottish brogue.
That sounds like, awesome.
It'd be like, I get it, but what the hell is your deal? So it's amusing. It's actually really amusing. The look of joyful confusion that I get on people's faces is mm-hmm. something that never really gets old.
I remember going to like a taco place with you once, Sam, and you ordered in Spanish, and the guy was definitely like, what?
It wasn't that my Spanish is bad. It's just unexpected.
It wasn't that he didn't understand you. It was that he just was not expecting Spanish to come out of you.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. But then you had a nice conversation, it seemed like. And he had asked, like, or where are you from, or where did you learn Spanish or something like that? And you explained Chile, and he was like, oh.
That's okay.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
Apparently it explains a lot. Anyway. Anyway, would you believe that this is not the last time Chile is going to come up in this episode?
Oh, really?
By the way. Oh, really? Yeah. So you have that to look forward to.
You know me. I'm always a fan of Chile Con, you know.
I know. Chile Con Carne. Let's see. We've also got, Montesong. Glad that we're still doing that, or that we still have Montenegro, and that we're going to have a national final. By the time this show airs, we will have those names. We don't have them right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We also have the Festival de Cungas names, and there are a few good ones.
Oh, yes.
Captain Pendesh herself, Anis Naziri, is back. Very excited for that. That song was amazing.
Yeah, she was brilliant.
And I have high hopes for that. Don't know these other names as well.
All right. So Camila Islamai has this really beautiful bluesy affectation in her voice. She's been a stalwart on the national final for, I want to say, since maybe around 2010 or so. Super talented singer. Rezarta Smaya is another name that really stood out to me. One of her songs at Festival de Cungas a couple years ago, I think came in third place overall, a song called Iyemia Nuse, which was written by the folks from Skodra Electronica.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, give that man the $10,000.
Her.
Whatever. Give that lady the $10,000.
Yeah. I also think Two Farm, I think, is back. So that's the return of Castro Zizo.
Oh.
It's not Fickmas without a little bit of Castro Zizo.
No, it really isn't.
Oh, yeah. Man. So again, we don't have these songs or the titles or anything like that fully yet. I think those are going to be released sometime in November, or at least little snippets of them. So yeah, I'm personally fangirling a little bit over between Miranda and Camila Islamai. I'm a happy, happy girl when it comes to this. So
awesome.
Fingers crossed that Montesong also gives us some fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of Junior news. I know everyone loves Junior. Mm-hmm. We've got Sophia Nersesian. That sounds
sounds Armenian.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not a Ukrainian name. I mean, maybe it is. I don't actually know. But anyway, she's going to represent Ukraine with Motanka, which means ragdoll. Did very, very well at Junior Vidbeer or whatever it's called. Lil Vidbeer. Vidbeerini.
Aw.
I don't actually know.
Vidbirito.
I could go for one of those right now.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know what I'm doing for dinner.
Vidbirito.
And we also knew that representing Spain, a junior was going to be Gonzalo Pinillos, but his song Érase Una Vez, or Once Upon a Time, has been released. If you could imagine the cast of The Greatest Showman singing about reading Rainbow.
Zac Efron?
Yeah. it's very show-tune-y, but all about the how much fun it is to read. It is wholesome AF. We will do our review shows beforehand, but I just wanted to put that out there, especially as Reading Rainbow in the United States has been revived.
That's true.
Yeah, so I wanted to, you know, shout out our public television while we still have it.
Yeah. Take a look. It's in a book for now.
And to our non-American listeners, Reading Rainbow was a show that was on public television when the three of us were kids, hosted by LeVar Burton, who many people will know as Geordi LaForge from Star Trek The Next Generation, or his appearance on Roots, but really sort of like a emblematic show of our childhood, of a friendly person reading to us. And it was wonderful, and it was iconic, and it has been revived, and we are so happy to see that.
They did a wonderful job of tricking us into thinking reading was cool.
I still haven't forgiven them.
No. And in other contest news, in some real contest news, finally, folks, we've got an artist for Panarctic Vision.
Yes!
And it's an act that has come up on this show before.
Craziness.
Which is kind of incredible. In a very, very minor way. But American Song Contest legend Quinn Kristofferson didn't participate because he's from Alaska and they got Jewel for that.
I mean, fair enough. If you get Jeweled for anything, you get Jewel. It's what you do.
Disagree. but Quinn Kristofferson won a tiny desk concert contest for like unestablished artists. This is a thing that National Public Radio does for now, that where we have a can be a very famous act. Just gathers around a tiny desk at NPR studios and does like a 3-4 song set. It's great. You've probably seen them. But there was a contest to like win a tiny desk appearance. And Quinn Kristofferson was the winner of that. And he wrote this incredibly powerful song about what it's like to be a trans man in a small Alaskan town. And if that isn't like the perfect entry for Panarctic Vision, like,
yeah. Absolutely excited about this. Unreal. Like super.
This feels like a very good fit in the way that like a Schlager is like, yeah, that's a Eurovision song right there. You know?
Yeah.
We haven't heard the song yet. We don't know anything about it.
No, but the announcement of the song made me wonder, because they were talking, or the announcement of Quinn as the representative of Alaska Panarctic Vision alluded to a song called Denali about the mountain in Alaska, which has been gone through a name change. It's been reverted to a name that isn't really appropriate for what Denali is. So we, you know, I'm almost wondering if the song Denali is going to be Quinn's song. I'm very, very excited to see this. Quinn is of Athabascan and Inupiaq heritage. So having a Native Alaskan trans man singing about something that is so emblematic of Alaska and so, so important to so many Alaskan cultures. I am so excited to hear this song. Quinn, we are on your side. We in Minnesota like to think that we're North. However, we bow to you in your borealisness. Kick some ass out there. We'll hear other songs. I'm sure there'll be other songs and acts that we love, but we're pulling for you up in Iqaluit. So,
USA, USA, in this Alaska. One instance,
USA. Alaska, then the world.
I mean, like he's I've seen that he's been collaborating with Portugal the Man. Like, I actually listened to the Tiny Desk concert earlier today when they announced Quinn as the representative. It's really, really good. It's really good. is really, really good.
Yeah, he's an outstanding artist. Really good get. And like we said, a perfect fit. I want to hear him sing the Panarctic theme song in all of its profane glory.
It's going to be so good. Going to be so good.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. So we go from an indigenous person to an Italian for our main subject of the day. Yay. Happy whatever day, everyone. We love you all. And we're very sorry. We haven't done one of go ahead.
Yeah, happy second Monday in October, y'all.
So let's we haven't done one of these in a while, and I always enjoy when we do just a single episode or a single segment about one song. And today we're talking about what is maybe the most famous Eurovision song of all time. And it's not Waterloo. It's not getting parged. It's not Hatred Moon Sigra. Not yet, anyway. It is a song that, by its actual title, may not even ring a bell. Nel blu dipinto di blu. In the sky, I was painted blue.
In the blue sky, painted blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Also known, more commonly known, perhaps, as Volare. A song that you have heard anytime you have ever been in an Olive Garden or an Italian restaurant or anything like that. It is just this quintessential thing. In America in particular, Dean Martin's version is pretty well known. But the original, I mean, the original was a hit here, and we'll get to that. But before that, it was Eurovision. It's a Eurovision song.
Mm-hmm. And not even a Eurovision winner.
Nope.
In 1958, in a contest where there were, I believe, only 10 songs, it was a distant third place after France and Switzerland. It lost to Lies Asia singing about polenta, 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 polenta. And yes, Giorgio is an adorable song, but it hasn't had the lasting power of Nel blu dipinto di blu.
I love polenta.
I do love polenta. So Eric, why were you inspired to write about Volare nel blu dipinto di blu? Like what triggered this? Was it just a song that you heard on your honeymoon that you just couldn't get out of your brain, or was there some other impetus?
No, Sam, I did hear it on the honeymoon.
I know, but you did.
So over the this past weekend, my wonderful wife and I did a introduction to ballroom dance course.
Aww.
We were adorable. We were the youngest people there by at least 50 years. it was a lot of fun. But one of the songs we danced to when learning it was one of the ones in 4/4.
Not waltz.
Was a version of Nel blu dipinto di blu. And I thought, this song really is everywhere, including the gymnasium of an elementary school in Lino Lakes, Minnesota, of all places. How was it the first time that song's been played there? Hard to say. It might not be.
I mean, honestly, it could have been at the, you know, the prom under the sea in 1959. Like, I don't know when Lino Lakes High School was established, but it's probably been, it's an evergreen. It's been mm-hmm. everywhere. It's playing in your head right now, isn't yeah. it? Right now. It's there. It's in your head. You can hear it. We don't need to play a clip of the song. You just know it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, copyrights and stuff.
Yeah, that too.
So,
which means we don't have to play it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting a copyright strike in your head right now, just thinking about it.
Oh, God, they're after me.
That's YouTube's next step. It's if you think about a song, you get a copyright strike. So, good luck, everyone. Anyway, this song's great. And it just feels so emblematic of like Italy. Like it just is like it's the most it's like well, what's the American equivalent of this song where like you hear it and it's like that's America,
American Pie,
yeah, or like Ba with the Ba by Kid Rock.
Oh God. Jesus Christ.
Jack and Diane, it feels like something
Brucey, something by Bruce. Yeah. Living on a Prayer, maybe, you know, if we're going Jersey.
We're not.
I'm always going Jersey. Shut up.
Derek, what were you going to say?
I don't know. It's just such a, you talk about it as like the quintessential Italian song, and it's just something about it. It lulls you into this kind of warm place. When I think about listening to it in a restaurant or something, it just kind of feels so chill and so pleasant. Like it I know there's some covers that have a little bit more bombast to them, but the original version, you just want to like sit on the patio and drink wine and look at the stars or something like that. It has this kind of feeling of like reverie or I don't know, just like soothing kind of calmness. I don't know what it is. I see why it lingers, you know, where other songs don't. It has a timelessness about it that I think is really special that you don't really always see at the moment.
It's one of those songs that, I mean, Derek, it's interesting that you bring up that sort of sense of reverie and you know, because it's really what the song is about. It's that feeling of falling in love, but it seeping into your dreams, that joy of the surreal kind of crazy place that your head goes when you fall in love. It's, you know, I never dreamed that, you know, I never thought I'd have a dream like this. I painted my hands and face blue and I flew into the sky, you know, just flying and singing. It's joy. It's still buttoned up and it's still refined, but it's still this wonderful, surreal joy. It's a song that just, it's exuberant and yet it's still comforting and it's surreal, but it's still accessible.
It kind of just washes over you in
but not in a way that's boring. Yeah.
No, like a stream of focaccia. Carbonara.
I can't think of any other song that I would compare it to other than Amor Peloche Deutsch. It has this that same kind of falling in love, but just a really kind of soothing, floating on the river kind of vibe to it. There's no like urgency or anxiety about it. It just feels really good to hear it.
I kind of get that same vibe. Again, we're talking Italy here, but Volevo essere un duro.
Oh yeah.
I that might be why it seemed so timeless. It just kind of hit that same spot in my brain of it just kind of floats along and it's wistful.
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 Word of the day.
Such a good word. Full of wist.
Happy wistful day, everyone.
Ah.
We're taking it back.
Ah. So wisty. But yeah, I mean, and with that exuberance, we end up having a moment in this song that kind of sparked so much for Eurovision, in the fact that you can argue that when Domenico Modugno raises up his arms in the chorus, is that arguably the first instance of choreography at Eurovision? Because 56 and 57, people were just standing on stage. 56, we don't really fully know because we don't have the we don't have any video of the entire contest. That's been lost to the ages, unfortunately. So I don't think they were, you know, slut dropping to refrain, but
you don't know they weren't.
We don't know they weren't, but like definitively, we can't prove it one way or the other.
Yeah, you can't say it didn't happen.
Yep. But you can say that, you know, could you point to Nel Blu Dipinto di Blu and have Domenico Modugno's arm choreography be the first dance move at the contest?
He walked so Chanel's ass could run. Yeah. So,
right.
So did you know that Domenico Modugno, oh God, if you haven't seen his Wikipedia page, like the main photo of him for Wikipedia, this is the most Italian man in the world, which makes sense. That he was also a member of the Italian parliament.
He was, yeah, near the end of his life.
Mm-hmm. Representing Turin, place we all know and mostly love. And it keeping it in Eurovision, at least for the moment, he competed two more times in the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And he got nul points once, which is...
Yeah, with a song that was not his best. But yeah, so as we know, Nel Blu Dipinto di Blu was 1958. He came back the following year in 1959 with a song Piove Ciao Ciao Bambino, which was very similar. Made it to sixth place. And then 1966 with the song Dio Come Ti Amo, or My God, How I Love You. No point, 17th place.
That's a duet, though, with, wasn't it? Yeah, it looks like it was.
1966.
Gigliola Cinque.
Oh, that may have been, I think that was at Sanremo that it was a duet.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And then he screwed it up by singing it to no one. Classic mistake. Yeah.
Right. And honestly, we could have actually almost had Modugno a fourth time at the contest, because he also won Sanremo. All of these songs that we've mentioned before, they were on the back of a Sanremo win, which is really quite impressive. Mm-hmm. He also won in 1962 with the song Addio, Addio, which was a duet at Sanremo, but he did not participate at Eurovision. He was one of the songwriters, but the other duet partner, Claudio Villa, represented Italy solo instead in 1962. But the man had 12 total Sanremo participations between 1956 and 1974, with four wins, which is absolutely incredible. The man was a legend.
How long do you suppose Sanremo was that year?
In 1962?
Yeah. Was it like only 6 hours?
I'm actually curious now to see how many songs would have been in 1962. Let's see here. So yeah, it was three full semifinals on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of February 1962, and a final on the 18th. So you had a week to recover. And it looks like there were 12 songs in the final, plus another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh my God. There were many.
I'm just here scrolling.
Literally just. Okay.
All right. So
number of entries, 32.
Okay. So the lesson here is that it's Sanremo has always been like that.
Yeah, I guess.
Honestly,
so.
That kind of makes me happy. That's
yeah.
Good. Yeah. So this guy, this song, what a wonderful thing. Do you recall any particular places or like weird situations where you've heard this song? I'll go first. I was on a subway train in Paris, and a guy with a microphone and a small amplifier that the microphone was plugged into came onto our car and serenaded us with this song for money.
The tag at the end, for money.
For
that's
money.
A nice touch.
Listen, I don't knock the hustle at all. I really don't.
No, I get it.
But this was the song. This was the song that he did.
Was it good? He was no Domenico Modugno is what I'm hearing.
I remember turning to Danny and being like, that's a Eurovision song, you know.
And Danny just rolling his eyes.
Like, can't get away from it. Mm-mm. Why is this Italian classic being played in a Paris subway? Because it just is. It just is everywhere. That's the way it is.
Can't escape it. No. I mean, I feel like I don't have any interesting stories of where I've heard it. It's just always been part of the landscape. It's just like you said, anytime you go into an Italian restaurant, it's a candle stuck in a bottle of Chianti and Velare. And where I was growing up, a red and white checkered tablecloth. I grew up in Jersey, these red sauce joints. It's just part of the landscape. I haven't had dinner yet, and I'm really getting hungry just thinking about all the Italian food that I've eaten while listening to Velare.
All right. So the other thing about this song. Oh, Derek, did you?
Oh, the red and that red and white patchwork is called a gingham pattern.
Ah.
They say it on
Bake Off.
Great British Bake Off sometimes. Come up to the gingham table. And I'm like, what the hell is a gingham table?
It was made by Roy Gingham of Yorkshire.
He tried to put out a song called Gingham Style, but it didn't catch on.
Nah.
Mm. So this song, as we've alluded to, was a hit in the U.S. In fact, it is the second song ever to top the Billboard Hot 100 as we know it today.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So they established that in the middle of 1958. Poor Old Fool or Poor Little Fool, something like that, by Ricky Nelson was the first. But then it was this. It was the first song to like leave the number one spot and re-enter the number one spot. It spent there a total of 6 weeks there. It was the number one song of the year that year in the United States, which is really something. The following year, the Recording Academy established a little event, a little new upstart event called the Grammy Awards.
Never heard of them.
And at the first Grammy Awards, it's kind of like the Barber Dex, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
At the first Grammy Awards, the first winner of Record of the Year was this song. The first winner of Song of the Year is this song. And if you're wondering, if you're not from here and you're like, why are those two different things? I'll tell
you. They are different, we swear.
One is for the performance of the song. The other is for songwriting, basically. But it won them both, as is often the case. So that's right. Not Like Us, Nel Plu de Blu won the same award. That's how you know it's great.
I mean, that's incredibly rare. I don't have the list in front of me, but there probably have been, you know, very, very few songs over the years that have not been in English that have won either of those awards.
Mm-hmm.
And so for it to sweep the pair of them is really quite incredible. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's the only Grammy winning Eurovision song.
I believe that's correct. Yeah. I don't know how high Waterloo charted, but it would not surprise me if this was only this was the only number one song from Eurovision. In the U.S. I
don't believe Waterloo made it to number one.
Number one is tough.
Yeah.
Like I'm just looking through the list here. I'm not seeing a ton of things not in English, unless you count. Oh, I don't know. My heart will go on.
And for the record, Waterloo made it to number six on the Billboard Hot 100.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, this has been recorded hundreds of times in a number of different instances. We mentioned Dean Martin; his was a top 20 hit. A couple other interesting ones. I believe the version that we heard at the dance thing that started this whole thing was David Bowie's version.
David Bowie.
He recorded it, and it's interesting, not a super high point of his career, if I'm being honest. He recorded it in 1986 in Italian, 100% Italian, for the British musical film Absolute Beginners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
An up-tempo version of it by the Gypsy Kings topped the Hot Latin charts in the early 90s. Barry White did a version of it. Which is interesting. Remember the singer Vitamin C?
Oh, yeah.
She did it for the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Lizzie McGuire movie.
Of course, we have Lucio Corsi's version with Topo Gigio.
Which was amazing. Mm-hmm. So earnest and honest.
Mm-hmm. Ray Conniff did it. I mean, there have been salsa versions of it. There have been so many things. There's one, though, that I want to talk about that I found super, super fascinating. Sam, are you familiar with the Viña del Mar International Song Festival?
Of course I am. Yes. Yeah.
Because it's in
Chile.
It's in Chile. That's right. So a version of this song, apparently original new song, is not a requirement.
It is not a requirement.
A version of this song won that contest, Viña del Mar, in 2010, performed by a gal named Simona Gariandro. She was representing Italy.
Mm-hmm.
She won with a version of this. And I think that's amazing. I also think another thing that's amazing, 3 years later, 2013, you know who mm-hmm. won this contest?
Oh, was that Hera Bjork?
Hera Bjork.
Yep. There have been quite a few crossovers between.
We should cover this contest.
Count me in.
I feel like.
I can think of just a few mm-hmm. off the top of my head of just acts that did Eurovision and also the Viña del Mar Festival. Paolo Meneguzzi did it. Let's see. Vanilla Ninja represented Estonia. Quite a few Spanish artists over the years. Yeah, the Viña del Mar is a big thing. It takes place every February, if I'm not mistaken, in a really beautiful coastal town in central Chile.
Awesome.
Yeah, I unfortunately was not able to make it to that. I was on the wrong semester, but it's big. It's a big deal there.
I'm looking at the sort of the chronology and the performers of from this in 2010, the year that Volare won the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Miranda was there.
Uh-huh.
That year, perhaps not super surprisingly. Also Paul Anka?
Yeah, it's a week-long festival, not too dissimilar from Sanremo in the fact that it's a big thing, everybody watches it, but it's really kind of three things in one. There's the international competition, which is more like contemporary pop. There's the folklore competition, and then there are just concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And for the acts that are participating in the concert that are not necessarily in competition with each other, they're basically competing with themselves. They receive trophies based on the roar of the crowd. The crowd is ruthless. They are called el monstruo, the monster. That if the crowd does not like you, they will let you know. You know, being booed off stage is not unknown. But if they like you, the more that they cheer and the more that they yell, they can give out the la gaviota de plata or de oro, so the silver seagull or the golden seagull or the antorcha de oro de plata.
They gild a real seagull.
Oh yeah, just pluck it out of the sky, dunk mm-hmm. it. Yep, yeah. They're all over the place over there. But yeah, it's a big, big thing. And yeah.
This
and
looks awesome.
It's a big deal. But interestingly, the 2010 Viña del Mar Festival was not fully completed. It had to be canceled on the last day because of a massive earthquake that hit on the last day of the competition. Mm-hmm. So I remember that year people were doing covers and things like that. So I don't know if that last show would have been more original content, but I remember that quite well that year.
So yeah, I'm just looking at the other competitors in this thing, and it mm-hmm. this really seems amazing. So Volare won, not even an earthquake can stop it. No. But some of our other competitors here, Elliot Yeaman, who was a singer on American Idol,
yeah,
a number of years ago, did Rock Around the Clock. Spain sent a version of Eres Tú,
another Eurovision connection. Yep,
the Eurovision song from 1973. A British group did I Can't Get No Satisfaction. The French singer did La Vie en Rose. This rules. We need to find a way to
it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It is a big, big deal.
Why is this not a Viña del Mar podcast and not this Euro nonsense?
Because I haven't tried to get accreditation.
It's a lot easier.
And it's also a lot easier to fly to Europe than it is to Santiago from here.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Anyway. Interestingly, but again, back to ChileCon. at the end of his life, we talked about Domenico Modugno being a member of the Italian parliament. Near the end of his life, he spoke out quite vocally against the Pinochet regime in Chile.
Yes. This dude was based. This guy is great.
Yeah. But it caused him to eventually, near the end of his life, to be banned from entering Chile. Like, supposedly he had a gig or an event that he was that he was signed up for, and the dictatorship did not let him in. So to see an Italian act when using his song, it's a little bit of poetic justice there.
I'm sure he was real torn up about it.
Yeah.
I mean...
No, this guy just rocks. Like, so right after this happened, after Eurovision, by the way, or even like as it was happening, some guy, his name was Franco Migliacci, accused him of plagiarizing one of his songs for Nel Blu Dipinto di Blu. And apparently it went something like this. He had performed... Migliacci had performed this song live in a number of instances and claimed that, Migliacci was the songwriter. The performer was a guy named Antonio DiMarco. And he claimed that like he had lost the sheet music somewhere and that clearly Domenico Modugno had found it and used it to plagiarize basically the entire song, music, lyrics, whole thing. The court basically said, what the hell are you talking about? These songs aren't even that similar, and tossed it out. And what did Domenico do? Did he just say, cool, I'm free? No, he sued him back for defamation and he won.
Get it, Domenico.
Take a shot at the king. You better not miss.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. This dude's awesome. He did pass away in 1994. He's no longer with us, but he's still real to me, and I love him. He's great.
Yeah,
the song's great. What a guy!
Yeah, it's interesting to know that when they had at the 50th anniversary concert of the Eurovision Song Contest, they had a special event called Congratulations, where they basically voted on what was the best Eurovision song of all time. And Waterloo, of course, ended up taking it. But I can't remember if it was Benny or Bjorn who said when he, you know, when they accepted the award, it's like, we're honored by this. To be fair, I voted for Valare, but Valare did come in second behind Waterloo.
I wonder if this thing, this song, a cover of this being so successful at Viña del Mar, is there an appreciation for this song in Chile because of how vocal Domenico was about Pinochet and all that?
Really good question. I don't know if, I mean, honestly, I'm not sure if news would have disseminated to the average Chilean at the time of his ban.
Which everyone, some guy in Italy thinks this sucks. Make sure everyone knows.
But the song was... Yeah. The song was certainly an absolute evergreen. I know that, you know, the first time I ever heard a lot of like classic Spanish Eurovision songs was when I was in Chile, like Eres Tú, like that crossed over, and, you know, a lot of songs from Spain and in Italy definitely crossed over into the Chilean market. So he was known, and the song is an evergreen here as much as it is there. I'd imagine similarly with Argentina, considering the massive Italian population there as well, there's probably a lot of crossover there. But I mean, wherever you go, like, I'm pretty sure I've heard versions of this sung by like Japanese ensembles. Like, you go wherever you go, the song follows you. It's like Mona Lisa's eyes. It just follows you. You can't escape it.
I can attest. I have seen a Japanese band sing this song.
Awesome.
And it's great. And it's fantastic. Yeah. And in another, you know, 70 years from now, people will still be rocking out to this. I mean, not rocking out to this, but sitting on their porches wistfully drinking wine to this.
I gotta find a metalcore version of it now, because you know there is one.
Oh yeah,
there's got to be tons of them.
Yeah, you at home listening to this, what is your favorite version of Valare? If it's not the original, what is your favorite? I personally love the Gypsy Kings cover. I think it is an absolute, it slaps. But yeah, what do you think at home? Let us know.
Send us your rare Valares.
We love our Valaricon. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you think of any other ways to connect Chile to this conversation, let me know. Again, you know how to reach us, 12pointsfromamerica at gmail.com, 12pointsUSA. You know how to reach us. We love hearing from you. Yeah, and I guess in our next episode, we'll maybe have some more news, maybe more Valares.
You can count on it. This is Valare's show now.
This is 12 Points of America, a Valare podcast.
Listen, we now have to wait another month for the other thing. Send us Valares. I'm begging you.
Or any other topics that you would like us to cover, honestly. Yeah, it's slow season is feeling slower this year than previous for, you know, reasons. But if you have topics that you want us to cover, let us know. We're open-minded. All right, you guys. All this talk about Italian food, I am freaking starving. So what do you say we wrap this up?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
Ask me where I'm going to dinner.
Please don't say the Olive Garden.
No.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll tell you after the show.
And on that note, everybody, see you next time. I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
And I've been Eric.
And America. Stop listening now.